Well, hello, good morning. Sorry, I'm not Steve from the USDA. And I think Steve from the USDA is also very sorry he's not able to be here. In preparation for this meeting and also some part of his general duties, Steve had prepared some things regarding the Global Outlook, and he was kind enough to share them with me. So if you were here in hopes of hearing some unofficial numbers, some unofficial forecasts from the USDA, the good news is that he forwarded those along to me, and you will be able to hear those in this talk. Perhaps, unfortunately, the bad news is that you've got to suffer through a little bit of my framing and context until I actually unveil those numbers to you. Of course, the purpose of this talk is provide a global outlook. You take a look at the outlook right now, not too subtle. It's a time of a lot of change going on. We've been experiencing some significant change this crop year, and I think over the next couple crop years, we also will be experiencing some significant change, meaning some significant uncertainty. You take a look at the factors contributing to this uncertainty and this change. Top of the list, we've got some changes occurring in cotton supply demand. As Jody mentioned, and I think as many of you in this room have heard, we do have a tariff situation going on right now that we'll hear a lot about on the next talk. And then finally, we also have some changes in the global macroeconomic situation with the strong growth, the accelerated growth that we've enjoyed over the past year or two has started to slow some cracks, and we're taking a look at a slower growth outlook probably for the next couple years. So these are all things we're going to touch on, and we're going to intermingle all these subjects throughout the rest of the presentation. Before I start getting into some of the meat, however, I do want to provide a little bit more context. You take a look at the cotton market. Of course, change is something that is normal. But what I want to do highlight is how that there are certain blocks of time when certain supply-demand factors tend to dominate the cotton environment. So if you take a look at global production, global mill use, the first block of time I want to identify is the 3 or 4 year period that led up to the price spike. So you take a look at 2006, essentially through 2009. This time period was characterized primarily, I would say, by decreases in global cotton acreage. That was due primarily to lower cotton prices relative to prices for corn or soybeans. You also see the dip we took in mill use during the recession. That set us up for the recovery that occurred after the recession, and with the acreage being low, we had this big shortfall that fed into the price spike, which occurred in 2010-2011. Now, after 2010-2011, we do have pretty neat separation in terms of our time periods. You take a look at the time period between 2011 and 2014. It was characterized by China importing more cotton while it had support programs in place for its domestic producers. These high imports led to high prices, led to relatively high cotton acreage around the world. Also, you take a look at the depressive effect we had in the wake of the cotton price spike. So unprecedented, essentially, in terms of the distortion we had during this time period, we had four very large surpluses at the global level in terms of cotton production. This, of course, is not sustainable. So we did see reforms being announced in China in 2014. With those reforms being announced, we saw China importing less cotton. China importing less cotton resulted in lower cotton prices. Lower cotton prices resulted in lower cotton acreage, lower cotton production, and that helped set us up for some shortfalls. Something else that hasn't gotten a lot of attention over the past couple of years is the fact that we have seen some accelerated growth in global cotton mill use. We talked about the global economy accelerating in terms of its growth over the past couple of years. That was a factor. Also, cotton prices becoming a little bit more competitive relative to other fibers also being a factor. So this growth in mill use, since I think maybe it hasn't gotten sufficient attention, is something I'm going to highlight here on these next few slides. You take a look at global mill use over time, it has been trending higher. That doesn't happen due to time alone. Of course, there are some causal factors behind that. For cotton, as is the case for any product, when you're trying to move it, you need customers to be buying it. And for those customers, if you have more customers, you'll be selling more. And also, if those customers have more money or are spending more money, you can potentially sell more. So if you look at the time frame for forecasts over the long term, and 2030 seems to be a popular endpoint in terms of projections that are out there right now. The projection is that global population will increase by about 12% or about 1% per year over the next 12 years. About 12 years from now, we're expected to have about 1 billion more people than we have right now. If we're going to rewind the clock and go back 12 years in the past, we also have added about 12 billion people compared to where we were 12 years ago. So consistent growth there. Take a look at economic growth over the next 12 years. The global economy is expected to grow by about one half. Once again, if you take a look at projections going forward, they pretty much mirror theirs going back. But the important thing here is that this is compounded. So the past 12 years, the global economy has grown by about 50%. And we'll take a look at the forecast for 50% growth over the next 12 years. That's on top of the 50% growth that we've already enjoyed over the past decade. You put those two together, essentially the factors are, you know, we've got not only more people on the planet coming down the pipe, but those people on average are going to have fatter wallets, meaning not only we have more customers, those customers are going to be more wealthy, potentially could buy more items, including cotton. So long-term trend for cotton is upward. Factors feeding to that, population growth, economic growth, that has been the case. We're expecting that to continue to be the case. But you take a look at this trend line we've got here. This trend line tells us we add on average about 1.5 to 2 million bales of cotton consumption every single year. But when we take a look at that trend line, you do see some periods of ebbs and flows. You take a look at what happened throughout much of the mid-2000s, we enjoyed really strong flow. That was due to China joining WTO, really strong global economic growth. And then, of course, after that very strong growth, we had some payback following the price spike. But the good news here is that, you know, take a look at where we are relative to the trend, is that we're back up to onto trend, and we're actually been up above trend in the current past two crop years. Some of the reasons why I've been able to get back up to trend or even move back above it is that we've seen some headwinds start to ease. One headwind that had been a primary factor contributing some of the weakness in consumption after the price spike is cotton's competitiveness compared to other fibers. I think many of you are familiar with, when you take a look at the global consumption landscape, that the primary competitor for cotton in terms of mill use is polyester. If you take a look at a price ratio of cotton prices, this is our Chinese cotton prices versus Chinese polyester prices, you can see that that curve has started to flatten out. So that dark blue line is showing our trend line. It's starting to flatten out. It's starting to actually got a little bit better. So while we haven't seen necessarily a lot of healing occur in terms of where that trend line is or where the price ratio is relative to where we were prior to the price spike, the good news is that at least the bleeding has stopped. Things are continuing to get worse. And that's something that's been helpful for global cotton consumption. You take a look at these price ratios, and then if we take a look downstream, so here I'm showing you cotton share of U.S. apparel imports. The USDA has a way to convert imports of home textiles and apparel back to the raw fiber equivalents. When you take a look at these share numbers, you can see that, yes, we did suffer some share loss after the price spike. But if you take a look at the trend, it's starting to ease out. It's starting to flatten out. Hopefully, we're not getting another head fake like we had back in 2012, 2013. But the good news here, once again, is that things aren't getting worse. That's allowing us to better get bite onto that population growth and that economic growth that's occurring right now with this headwind starting to abate. Something else that we've identified at Cotton Incorporated, we have an import database that tracks the weight, the count, and the value of all imported garments and home textiles coming into the U.S. When we take a look at these, we can derive some other variables, and one of the variables we can derive is average product weight. Something else that hasn't gotten a lot of attention over the past couple of years is that average product weights have gotten lighter. So in the apparel market, there has been a trend towards athleisure. You take a look at athleisure garments, you want things to be cool when you're exercising. So that's been a factor contributing to this trend. Also been trends in terms of silhouettes. For those of you not familiar with the term silhouette in the apparel industry, that refers to the cut of the garment. You take a look at your jeans that have been popular over the past couple of years with those tight-fitting jeans that are out there right now. That's a lot different than those baggy jeans that existed if we wind the clock about 10 years or so. So that's another factor contributing. And then finally, these decreases in average garment weight, they coincided with the price spike, things getting more expensive. One way to make your garments in terms of when you're sourcing them a little bit less expensive is to take some of the fiber out. So that's another factor that's been an issue. With this database that we've got, we're able to aggregate these changes. So instead of taking a look at a product-to-product level, we can also take a look at changes in average product weight across the board. We've done that here with this this average index of garment weight. You took the decreases here, essentially lost about 15% in terms of average product weight coming into the U.S. Over the past year compared to where we have been. We go back about a decade ago. We take a look at the percentage change here, 15 percentage points, the change we've seen relative to the share, about 10 percentage points. So the effect of garments getting lighter on consumption actually has been a bigger headwind than loss in share. But the good news here, once again, take a look at the trend of this curve. Things have flattened out over the past couple years. Things have actually gotten a little bit better over the past year or so. So this headwind has already been pretty much abated. So we can start to enjoy the full benefit of economic growth and population growth going forward. We're back up to trend, even above trend right now. All right. So with that, we've covered some global factors. I'm going to start shifting gears now and talk about more about what's going on at the country level in terms of the evolution in the cotton market. To do that, once again, unfortunately, I need to walk you guys through a little bit more history. And, of course, the dominant factor in terms of cotton history recently is the price spike that occurred in 2010-2011. I think a lot of you know that a reason why we had that price spike, as alluded to earlier, was the fact that we had lower cotton acreage because we had high prices for competing crops, particularly corn and soybeans, around the world. contributing factor for that is that oil prices were high. We had ethanol mandates going into place leading up to this time period. Also, strong economic growth leading to growth in protein demand from emerging markets, also contributing to strength in prices for protein feeds, such as corn and soybeans as well. But the point is not to go into the past here. I want to talk about the present and the future, and I promise you that I'm getting there. The point of all of this is the price spike caused a huge distortion in the cotton market. When you take a look at huge distortions at industry level, you tend to see governments get involved. In the wake of the price spike, we saw the Chinese government become involved in an unprecedented way. So you take a look at the Chinese government, essentially throughout the entire modern era, they have operated their reserve system, somewhat analogous to our strategic oil reserve system. Traditionally, in terms of at least of how it was used in China, it was a fine-tuning operation. Prices were high, Chinese government would sell from reserves. Prices were low, they would help out their growers by buying to feed into reserves. But you take a look at the price spike, the Chinese government, such as similar to myself right now, talking about the causal factor being the high prices for other crops, lower prices for cotton. To prevent this problem going into the future, they wanted to guarantee a high price for their cotton growers. So they announced a high guaranteed price in 2011. Started using the reserve system in a new way, which was to guarantee these very high prices, which are around $1.40, $1.50. You take a look at the effects of these price guarantees. It caused the Chinese government to purchase 85 to 90% of its domestic cotton crop during this time period. Since a key feature of this reserve program, or this guaranteed price program, was that the Chinese government was taking this cotton, putting it in government warehouses, and essentially withholding it from the market. Now, with 85, 90% of the Chinese crop being bought and withheld, Chinese mills were being largely fed by imports during this time period. That led to, once again, the support for cotton acreage and production around the world during these 3 years. Chinese government has a lot of money, but of course, this is unsustainable. You can only buy your entire crop for a certain amount of time. So Chinese government announced some reforms in 2014. Key feature of these reforms are import restrictions, emphasizing the use of domestic supplies coming from both Chinese production and also accumulated Chinese reserve supplies. So take a look at what's happened since then. The Chinese government has started a destocking process. They've conducting auctions between March and September for each of the past 3 years. And if you're paying really close attention to these bowl counts here, you take a look at the number of bowls that are left. We're just slightly above where we were when this whole crazy process started. So we are probably going to see the next phase in terms of this Chinese program cycle occur, which probably will feature less restrictions on Chinese imports. And if you take a look at Chinese production deficits, around 15 million bales. Chinese imports over the past couple of years have been around 5 million bales. So essentially, we're taking a look at a tripling of Chinese imports sometime in the near future. So with all that, you guys should have learned that I think one thing is that you can do some pretty fun things with PowerPoint animations. But I think another thing that you learned is that we've got a pretty big change coming here. You take a look at this change coming in terms of Chinese imports. We're talking about 10 million bales. This is by far the biggest change we're going to see in the global cotton balance sheet for the next year or two. If you don't believe me, we take a little bit closer look at the numbers. Here I'm showing you Chinese figures for ending stocks. This includes mill inventories, trader inventories, and also includes government supplies, so total warehouse supplies in China. You take a look at the number at the end of the last crop year or supplies this summer. We're about half the level we had at their peak, but we're still about 30% where we were in normal times in the mid-2000s. Using some figures published regarding Chinese sales and purchases, we can get a better idea in terms of how much cotton the Chinese government is holding on to. Numbers from COTLUC and USDA pretty much in agreement regarding level in Chinese government reserves right now, some around 2.7 million tons. I don't like to harp on about specific numbers too much, but I think this one is really important. This fall, the Chinese government announced that it wants to maintain its government reserves some around 2.5 million tons. So essentially, we're already there. So the Chinese government does another round of sales this spring. They may need to do another round of purchases as well to help bring in some cotton that could potentially feed into import demand from China as well. So taking a look at what all means for Chinese imports, stabilization of Chinese reserves, simply just maintaining reserves at their current level or Chinese stocks at their current level means that Chinese imports need to match their production deficit. Here I've just got Chinese production compared to mill use. You take a look at the production gap this year, it's about 15 million bales. So once again, China needs to triple its imports sometime relatively soon now that reserves are drawn down. So a big question here is one that OA and Gerald are going to answer for us in the next presentation is, you know, what's going to happen? What does that mean for U.S. demand? But before we get there, once again, in the spirit of this global presentation, I want to take a look at where China might potentially get all that cotton from, particularly if things are a little bit complicated from the U.S. And the way that I'm framing that is in terms of our potential competitors. So you take a look at global exporters, typically framed in terms of discussion of machine-picking exporters, which would be Australia, Brazil, and ourselves. You take a look at the volume of cotton exported by these two countries last crop year, which is observed data, so that's why I'm not showing you 18-19 figures. But you take a look at the volume there, just for context, you add them two together. Not asking too much of you in terms of mental math, but you take a look at those numbers, it's below 10 million bales. These two countries aren't enough to meet China's increase in import demand, let alone how much they are already importing as well. And we, of course, we've also got the rest of the world that wants some cotton from these countries, potentially, too. So we can take a look at our handpicking exporters, a little bit more supply there. India, traditionally the world's second largest exporter, they shipped about 5 million bales last year. You take a look at the collection of countries from West Africa, also a decent amount of country cotton exported from there. I've asked you already to do some mental math. Now I'm going to have a geography quiz. I don't know if you guys can recognize this form or not, but this is Central Asia. This is Uzbekistan plus Turkmenistan. You put those two together, they represent about 1.3 million bales. So again, we do the math here, add them all together, 5.2, 4.8, that's 10. And then you know, we got about 11, 11.5 million bales from our handpicking exporters. Once again, just enough to maybe meet the increase from China. China already is importing some already. And we've also got to supply other markets. So the point of all this is, it's going to be hard to get to that 10 million increase in demand coming out of China if it doesn't somehow benefit the U.S. This is, of course, going to bleeding into the next conversation. I don't want to get too deep into it, but U.S. is 40% of global exports. It's hard for it not to benefit us if we have this big increase in imports. Briefly, walking through 18-19 figures for some of our exporters. You take a look at Australia. The big story this year is they had severe drought. You take a look at Australian production. It's expected to decrease by about half. This year, Australia is expected to produce about 2.5 million bales relative to about 5 million bales they grew last year. Here's an equivalent of the drought monitor map for Australia. The darkest red blotches there representing the worst drought ever recorded in Australia. And unfortunately for them, that coincides pretty heavily with where Australia grows their cotton. So you take a look at that volatility in Australian production, that's due to unavailability of water over the long term. Unfortunately, too, when you do see things get dry in Australia, it can linger on for a period of a couple years. Australia has gotten some rain over the past couple months that may help out the reservoir supplies, but remains to be seen whether or not they will have a full recovery from this drought situation. Take a look at Brazil. Like the U.S., they're responsive to competing crop prices, in particular those prices for soybeans. Due to low prices for soybeans, Brazil has really ramped up its cotton production over the past couple years. This year, Brazil is expected to have record cotton production and a record exportable surplus, so we can expect increased competition coming from Brazil. One issue that they've got, it seems like everybody's got an issue, relates to their logistics. We have seen some truck strikes occurring in Brazil that's caused shipment delays and also some increase in costs in terms of getting cotton out of the country. Take a look at India. The situation in India in terms of the big story is not necessarily one in terms of being year over year. It's more of a long-term story. If you take a look at Indian production, they had enjoyed really strong growth in production over much of the past decade and a half. That was due to the introduction of GM seeds and some of the increases in yield that has brought about. But the big story there is that India hit a ceiling essentially back in 2014. And since then, they really haven't been able to pick their cotton production back up to where it was at their peak back in 2012. So what I've got showing you here is just a video. This video was initially shown by Dr. Kranthi from the ICAC at the USDA Outlook show a couple years ago. But what is essentially highlighting some of the issues they've had related to pests. You take a look at this ginning operation in India, all that wriggling around that you see in the gin, those are pink bollworms being separated from the cotton fiber. This has had big impacts on Indian cotton production over the past couple years. Different regions being affected at different times. Our agronomists and also Dr. Kranthi with the ICAC emphasizing that this is a problem related to their production practices. The cotton in Indian fields sits out there a lot longer than it does in most other countries around the world. That allows pests more opportunity to develop resistance. And unfortunately, the pink bollworm in India has developed some resistance. So big long-term issue from them, an issue for the world in terms of production too, because India is the world's largest cotton producer. Take a look at Indian's production right now. They're down about 2-3 million bales compared to where they were 5 years ago. Again, look a little bit further down our list in terms of export competition. You want to take a look at West Africa. Of course, they do export a decent amount of cotton. Relatively good weather over there and also relatively good prices have led West Africa collectively to have record cotton production this year and last year. But you take a look at the size of that growth, it's pretty minimal, particularly in comparison to some of the decreases we've had in India. So netting everything out over the past few years, a little bit of reduction in terms of hand-picking supplies or exportable competition from hand-picking exporters. And then finally, just to touch on Central Asia, the big story there in terms of their cotton production also is a long-term one. And when you take a look at the long-term story there is that they're shifting away from cotton. They're shifting more into fruits and vegetables. which is why I've got this produce shown up here. Take a look at Uzbekistan. If we rewind the clock back to 1980s or 1990s, they were back and forth with the U.S. in terms of being the top exporter globally. But if you take a look at Uzbekistan for their current crop year, they're expected to export less than 1 million bales. So a pretty big change in terms of supply from Central Asia occurring, particularly over the longer term, but also over the shorter term as things continue to trend lower over there. So with that, you guys are caught up to the present. Now we're going to start taking a look further down the road, and I hope you're catching on right now that I'm fully channeling Steve. These are numbers from Steve and the USDA, but once again, emphasizing these are unofficial figures right now. So you take a look at the outlook for 1920 in the U.S. due to expectations primarily of weather conditions being better and potentially a slight increase in acreage. We're taking a look at about 3.5 million bales of additional production coming from us next year. Brazil, due once again to some of the weakness in soybean prices, they're expected to have an increase in cotton production next year, being a southern hemisphere producer. However, some uncertainty there because they have more time than we do to respond to market conditions. Australia, under the assumption of more normal weather and them getting some more rainfall, expected to produce about 1.5 million more bales next crop year. Take a look at the situation for our hand-picking countries. Expected to have about 2 million more bales of cotton coming out of India next year. This is due to expectations of more normal weather conditions on top of the pest issues that they've been suffering from. They also have had some abnormalities in terms of weather, particularly water availability issue this year, somewhat related to the monsoon, but also related to stream flow coming out of the Himalayas and northern India. A similar situation affecting Pakistan and Central Asia, dependent on those same snowpack, the same stream flows coming out of the mountains, not there in a way that it has been. Assumptions of more normal water availability in those areas are expected to lead to mild 500,000 bale increases in those regions. And then finally for West Africa, not much change expected there. So big question marks, of course, around China are expected to see a slight increase in production in China next year. Some of the positive factors contributing to increase in Chinese production. Chinese government continues to maintain price supports in Xinjiang province. Some minor adjustments there supporting acreage. Expected to see increased concentration in terms of acreage in Xinjiang compared to the rest of China. Xinjiang, China tends to have higher yields. So as you move more acres into that province, that's contributing to higher yields slightly nationally in China. The expectation is in Xinjiang, acreage is up according to results from Chinese government survey, national area about flat, and once again that shift towards Xinjiang explaining that slight increase coming out of China. So the big global number, if you added together all the increases that I've been talking about in the past couple of slides, we're looking at about an increase in global production next year, about 10.5 million bales. Once again, these are unofficial numbers from Steve, from the USDA. If we add that 10.5 million bales to our current production this year, that will lead us to record production next year. So record production being forecast. This current crop year, we expect to have record mill use. If we have continued mill use growth next year, USDA expecting average growth of just under 2%. That would result in, once again, another record for mill use. So we're looking at both record production and record mill use in the coming year. Looking at production and mill use to be relatively stable, relatively equal in terms of their volume, so the potential for a slight surplus. Of course, you know, we have a surplus that can add to global stocks. Global stock levels can be very important for prices. But over the past couple of years, what has been even more important for prices is the allocation of stocks inside and outside of China. And of course, what's going to be very important for the allocation of stocks inside and outside of China is what China decides to do relative to its imports. That also means what China is going to do relative to its tariffs. And that means that it's time for our next speakers to talk about that and their comments. So that's what I've got.